Cresh, you know how I say often that on this podcast we are fans of Eurovision, but we're not really experts.
Oh yes, I know that very well, Martin.
You know that very well. Well, I think we have someone coming on the podcast today who I think we can definitely say is both.
Amazing.
Yes, we have Ewan Spence, who is a commentator for the Junior Eurovision Song Contest. He has his own huge Eurovision podcast himself called ESC Insight. And we are so delighted that he's going to be coming on to talk about the Junior Eurovision Song Contest, which is happening very, very soon. We are very excited.
Yes, indeed. Hello. This is Nulpois, the Eurovision fan podcast by myself, Laura, and Martin as well.
Hello. Yes. And there's lots to talk about today, actually. So let's try and whip through things. Don't forget, chat with Ewan Spence coming up very soon. But first, some hokey-cokey going on. Who's in, who's out for Rotterdam?
Very good. Very good, Martin. Yeah, well, we've got 41 countries who are going to open up, Martin, for the Eurovision Song Contest 2020.
Sounds a bit weird when you say it like that.
It's going to keep happening, Martin. We're just going to have to get used to it. 41 countries in all, 35 competing in the two semi-finals. But let's spare a thought for two of the countries who aren't going to be taking part in Eurovision, Hungary and Montenegro. They've withdrawn from the competition, but Bulgaria and the Ukraine are making a comeback. So as two go in, two go out.
So do we know why they've withdrawn?
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting, Martin, actually, especially the Montenegro reason. Basically, the broadcasters decided to withdraw from competing, saying they're going to use the €130,000 funding that they would have been required to participate in the contest on investing in the broadcasters' fleet of cars.
What? They're going to buy a load of cars?
for the broadcast. They've said in a statement, the Eurovision Song Contest participation costs around €130,000 each year. Our representatives have mostly achieved modest results, hardly qualifying to the Grand Final. So this year, we've decided to invest that money in the RTCG fleet renewal. The plan is to buy 5 new cars, which will significantly improve the safety of our crews, who exceed over 1,000 kilometres every day.
That is brilliant. But do they not... Right, I swear I read this stat that an episode of Strictly Come Dancing, which is a massive, if you're not from the UK, it's a massive sort of Saturday night glitzy glamour TV show. An episode of that costs, I think it was about £1 million. One episode.
Sure, okay.
Whereas the UK's contribution to the Eurovision Song Contest is £250,000, which is a quarter of that. And look how much TV you're getting. Look at the show you're getting. You're getting like the two semi-finals. You're getting the final, which is so, so long and the biggest glitz and glam you could ever ask for. I think personally that is a fair price to pay. €130,000 for a big TV company to pay for well over 3 hours of really, really high quality content is absolutely nothing, and they're spending it on a load of Fiat Pandas.
Well, we don't know if those are the cars that they will choose, Martin, but they
are. Yeah, they are.
But yes, they that is apparently, you know, it's for financial reasons, and they've just decided we'd rather spend it on cars.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Right, there is much to talk about, and I've been mentioning that we were going to have a chat with Ewan Spence, so let's do that now. And we should talk about, before we say hello to Ewan, the fact that it is the Junior Eurovision Song Contest coming up very, very soon, shouldn't we?
Yeah, that's right, Martin. I have to say, I'm quite intrigued by this year. Last year, Poland won Junior Eurovision, and it looks like they may well win again, actually. They've got a really great song, but there's a couple of others in the running. For example, France with their song Bim Bam Toi, which couldn't be more French, to be honest. I'm looking forward to that one. But yeah, the UK, of course, isn't in. It hasn't been in for several years. It's not taken part in Junior Eurovision at all. Wales is taking part, though. So that'll be an interesting one to see how, you know, Wales quite known for their good singing.
Yeah, sure.
But hasn't actually done very well recently, I have to say.
I do find that a little bit strange, I have to say, because Wales is part of the UK, so why couldn't they just be the UK entry? That's very strange. There must be some sort of legal reason why they have to go in under a different name. I don't know. But anyway, maybe we shall get to the bottom of it. So let's have a chat with Ewan. Now, I should say Ewan is very, very well respected in Eurovision circles. He is the commentator for the Junior Eurovision. He commentates on the adult competition as well for various radio stations. He also runs a podcast, ESC Insight, which has all the news that you need to know about Eurovision. And we're chatting to him now, Laura.
Yeah, hi, Ewan. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. Really appreciate it. We're interested, obviously, with Junior Eurovision starting quite soon to find out a bit more about it. And as you are a big commentator for Junior Eurovision, I just wanted to find out, you know, for Eurovision fans who might not have watched it before, what is it like? How close is it to the actual song contest? And what's different about it as well?
I mean, one of the great things is it's less than 47 hours long. The adult contest has kind of got a bit bigger and a bit bigger as TVs have got bigger. Junior manages to keep everything just over 2 hours, so it feels much more like a classic contest to the older viewer. And by older viewer, I mean giving the target audience is 9 to 14 for Junior Eurovision. It's still really exciting. But you're going to get that same mix. You've got songs about peace and love. You've got some high energy up tempo dance numbers. You've got some great pulse tropical dance minor chorded numbers coming out from Eastern Europe. You've got huge great big soaring popper numbers coming from Australia, so we still have that controversy as well. You've got an incredibly French sounding song from the French, and if there's one thing people forget that France are good at Eurovision, it's when you hear a song, you just go, oh, that's France, isn't it? Mm. And the same comes through at Junior Eurovision. Last year, they made sure that you knew it was France by putting a very small model of the Eiffel Tower on stage. But that's the French do that at grown-up Eurovision as well. It's like, look, we're France, Eiffel Tower, small park bench, ice cream van. All the medium-sized props come out at Junior Eurovision. But it's very much the same show. It's a 50-50 split. There's a 50% jury vote. There's 50% public vote. You have 3 minutes for the songs. You've got the postcards in between. You have an interval act. You've got the scoring coming through much the same way as you do in May. There are some subtle differences. For example, the public vote isn't a televote or SMS, it's actually online, and it opens on Friday, so it opens for like 2 days before the contest actually starts that everybody can vote, and then it kind of stops when the music's on, and then you get your half hour voting window again. So there are some subtle differences, so that means that your online support base for all the singers is very important. So one of the reasons that Roxy Weigel did really well last year is she had a really strong social media following, and because it's an online vote, people in Poland could vote for Poland, people in France can vote for France, and so on and so on. People in Wales can vote for the Welsh singer, and it is Eurovision, but it's also its own kind of offshoot of Eurovision as well. For example, Georgia's really, really good at Junior Eurovision. Mm. I mean, Georgia is just what Sweden is in May. Georgia is in November.
Okay.
I did not know that. What I quite like about it, Ewan, is that it's quite a good training ground as well, not just for ideas that might go on to happen in the adult Eurovision Song Contest, but also you see a lot of the contestants that were contestants in Junior Eurovision a few years down the line coming back and representing their country as adults.
Yep, and you have a lot of them. For example, this year in Tel Aviv, one of the backing singers from Malta was Destiny, who took Malta's second win at Junior Eurovision. Yep, Malta can win at Junior Eurovision. And Destiny was there sort of just getting a feel of the adult contest and the size of everything. And she was one of the backing singers on Chameleon. But there's also other things. Do you remember that lovely flag ceremony that you get at the start of adult Eurovision?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And you get all the contestants coming out. Junior's had that for ages.
Oh.
That came from Junior. It was done first over there. Lots of stuff. I mean, slight changes in the voting system and the presentations. Obviously, it's trialing out online voting. And there's a lot of people going, oh, we don't want online voting at Eurovision. It's just like, well, they're ironing out all the problems at Junior. And also it's slightly cheaper as well. It doesn't cost £3 gazillion of national budget and debt to actually put on. It comes in about £3 to £4 million or so. Still a significant investment for a broadcaster, but it's well within reach.
Now, you were talking a bit about France there and Bim Bam Toir, I believe, is the song there, which is very French. I had a little watch of it earlier. But who else are the favourites this year, do you think, Ewan?
I think you have to look at both France and Poland. France, because it's got this song that I think the jurors are going to think is great as a junior song. But it's also mature enough that it's going to attract the younger audience voting. It's a very strange thing. You see at Junior Eurovision that the adult jurors tend to go for things that are more kid-like, and the sort of kids and teenage votes go for something that's more adult-like, and France manages to get a very good middle ground in there. Poland you cannot discount, partly because they're hosting, but partly they're also putting it on their main TV channel. And because it's an online vote and you can vote for your own country, more people will be watching in Poland than in some of the other countries. So they're going to get a boost in the telly vote as well. And Spain's back. And we all know how much Spanish fans love Eurovision. So you've got to think, if you're looking at a dark horse in terms of the telly vote, Spain is going to throw something in there as well. How well it does with the jury is the big question.
And what's your involvement in it then, Ewan? Like, how long have you been involved in the competition? And your role, I suppose, is actually, as we know very well from the adult competition, it's a really, really important one for the viewer at home.
I'm actually the radio commentator for the United Kingdom. We're going to be broadcasting with our main partners over at Fun Kids, who you find on digital radio across the UK and online at their station. It's carried by a number of other stations as well who can opt in to the coverage. S4C in Wales are doing the TV coverage in the UK. So if viewers are looking for a commentator, they can get that from S4C, but it will be in Welsh. So I've been going to Junior Eurovision since 2011. But in 2013, the EBU decided that they wanted to put a commentator on the online feed on YouTube. So for 2013, the EBU invited me, the colour commentator, alongside the EBU team at that point. And I said at the same time, that's great. Can I also like put that out on the radio on the Edinburgh local station that I was volunteering with? And that happened. And then the year after that, the EBU said, well, we're going to mix a team up, so we don't need you as the colour commentator on YouTube. And I kind of, you know, was a bit sneaky about, well, can I still have the radio rights? And they kind of went, well, you've got to sign this bit of paper and all the forms and everything. It's like, yep, let's do that. And it's built up from there. In the same way that, you know, broadcast, for example, that's SBS and TV did that since the 80s. Hmm. They couldn't enter, but they still took the show. They still licensed it from the EBU. They still put, well, at that point, they actually just took the Terry Wogan commentary from the BBC, but eventually they switched to their own commentating team and then they entered. So I've been doing a similar path on radio, and I've been the UK radio commentator for Junior Eurovision now since 2013.
Brilliant. Well, Ewan, thank you so, so much for having a chat with us here on Null Point. We really, really appreciate it. And
yeah.
And best of luck.
Yeah, I get to describe pyro for a living. <You're> wonderful.
Very, very true. Thank you so
thank
much,
you.
Ewan.
Elliot, thank you. Enjoy your junior.
So I thought, Martin, we'd just fit in quickly. If you've been on Twitter and you're a Eurovision fan and you follow lots of Eurovision Twitter accounts, you'll probably have heard about this thing, ESC 250, which is basically a vote on your top Eurovision songs. People vote for their top 10 and it's all compiled into a big list of 250 Eurovision songs. I have to say, Sweden's Loreen has done very well for the past 6 years running. Euphoria has been top. They're saying, can Duncan Lawrence possibly beat her? I'm going to be honest, Martin, I don't think so. But
Is this like your favourite Eurovision song of all time?
That's right, yes. It's been going for 11 years, this. It's the Eurovision Top 250.
And Loreen's Euphoria
yes.
has been winning 6 years in a row. I mean, no, it's a good song. Don't get me wrong. It's
come
a very,
now.
Very good song. A very good Eurovision song. But come on, Waterloo by ABBA.
Yes, I mean, I think that's done. Actually, I'm looking at it last year. That didn't even make the top 10. So I think a lot of...
What?
Yeah, I know. Sorry about that. Last year, shall I tell you a couple of the top ones? Euphoria, obviously, was number one. Mm-hmm. We had Fuego by Cypress. That was in number two. That was 2018's top track. The winner for Portugal was in third. So it looks like there's a couple of... quite recent ones really that make it into the top, but so I think maybe some of the older entries, you know, they're not as played, they're not in people's minds as much, so they're not remembered as much, I think. So I'm looking at what
people are just voting for the last thing that they've heard.
No, but you can't deny Euphoria is a very good song, and that was in 2012, and that's beaten all of the more recent ones to come out top. So that is a test of a good Eurovision song if it's beating winners from more recent years, surely.
Well,
go on then. Who would you put then?
I'm thinking there's loads of massive Eurovision songs that I would certainly include in the list. I mean, Waterloo by ABBA would be my number one. But okay. There's that one about Diggy Loo, Diggy Lay. That's a good one. There's that one about Bobby
Socks. You
can't
even remember the name.
That's it. Diggy Loo, Diggy Lay. And there's that one about Bobby Socks. I really like that one from 2001, the Danish entry, the Olsen Brothers, Wings of Love. That's very nice. Our personal favourite, Cress, Cake to Bake.
I've got
an entry from Latvia a few years ago.
Yeah, that's not going to go in my top 10, I'll be honest, Martin.
No, fair enough. No, but my point is, there's loads and loads of brilliant, brilliant songs that you probably don't even realize are Eurovision hits because they're just such a part of popular culture now that are way, way bigger than Euphoria by Loreen.
I don't know, Martin. I do really like Euphoria. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm sad that Ooh Ah Just a Little Bit by Gina G isn't in that top 10 because,
yes!
I mean, that is a banger and a half, and that is always played at the sort of semi-finals at Eurovision warm-up, and everyone gets really excited about that. So that would definitely be in my top 10. I think Euphoria would be, though. I also quite like Wild Dances by Ruslana.
Yes, that is a great
Wild
song.
Wild Dances. So that would probably
like she's
be
here.
Hey, there she is, Ruslana. But I don't, yeah, so it seems like a lot more of the modern songs and the winners get sort of favourite. But, I mean... you can change all this with your vote, Martin. If you go on to, I think it's songfestival.be, look them up and vote. They're collecting all the votes at the moment. So you could possibly change this sway and see Waterloo at the top. Is that our campaign? We want to see Waterloo for number one.
And certainly my campaign. Waterloo for number one. It's surely, surely it's the greatest Eurovision song of all time.
It's like the Christmas number one, but for Eurovision.
Yeah, it is.
Waterloo for number one.
Come
we
on.
Want it.
Let's make it happen. And on that note, it's time to end Nul Poir. Thank you very, very much for listening. We will be back very, very soon with more pointless Eurovision news and Eurovision chat. Thank you, Cress.
Thank you, Martin.